But I don't think they give the one thing. Here's the one thing that you should really use it for. Here's the one thing that we excel at. That comes back to my product position, which is they didn't really say what the thing was. And I don't know what the thing is. Are they better? I think the reviewer found out that I think his summary was, it's not better for anything.
Hmm. Yeah. This is Unsolicited Feedback with me, Fareed Mosavat, and my co-host, Brian Balfour. This week, we have part two of our episode with Kieran Flanagan, who has been the CMO at companies like Zapier and HubSpot. In this episode, we go into a little bit of a back and forth and conversation about the differences in two recent AI device launches, one from a company called Humane and the other from a company called Limitless. We talk about the differences in their positioning, differences in their product strategy, and our predictions about which approach is likely to be more successful, along with feedback for those companies on how we think they may have done things a little bit differently. This is a classic unsolicited feedback episode, giving feedback on some late product launches. After that, we get into a brief discussion of the latest social networking app to hit the scene in tech circles, an audio social network called AirChat. And we talk about our brief experiences with it, but I'm sure we'll get into a deeper dive on that topic in a future episode. This creator question is a great place to segue to talk a little bit about some launches of the Humane AI Pin, as well as Limitless. And one of the reasons I bring this up is one of the big controversies was a review by a very popular device reviewer on YouTube, MKHBD. I don't know him that well, so I hope I got that right, about the Humane AI Pin, where he basically took it around town for a while, reviewed it, and I would say panned it, was not very happy with it. Great example of an authentic creator voice doing the thing that they do, and got a lot of pushback on it. And I wanted to compare and contrast this a little to the Limitless device, which also was announced, very similar type idea, a pin that does some AI stuff. But the reaction to it, now it's not launched, just to be clear, but the reaction to it has been hyper, hyper positive. And I'm curious for you as a marketer, Kieran, if you have unsolicited feedback for either side of this about what worked and what didn't work. And also just do you think reviewers should be mean to products that are nascent or not? This is another question.
This is a good example. There's three great things in here. This is a great example of positioning and brand really matters, and I can go into why. And there's a great example. I'm curious to get both your thoughts, because you're both product people, is like, when should you ship an MVP? Like, when is something too much of an MVP to actually go out into the world? But to come back to positioning and brand. So the first thing on positioning is Humane, I think, made the mistake that they didn't try to position to a certain number of use cases, right? Like, it's just like the new computer. If you actually go to the website, it's like, whether you're making calls, sending messages, seeking answers, capturing moments, taking notes, or managing your digital world, right? Like, it's all things and nothing. Whereas I think if they just started to get a wedge, like there was a good tweet by Owen, one of the co-founders of Intercom, and he had some like use cases that he thought it would be good for. One of them actually was like medical for nurses, right? Mm-hmm. That one makes a lot of sense. I unfortunately spent some time in the hospital recently for an arm infection, like about four days. And the nurses would come around and they would be trying to do many things at once and have a conversation. And there's a real use case for them to be able to take notes without having to do that with their hands, and then be able to have something to synthesize those notes later, right? So there's probably some use cases that are actually good use cases for where the product is today, but they didn't position like that. They tried to position against the computer, like the personal computer.
Yeah.
And then so if you do that, you're going to get measured against the personal computer. And when you're so far away, then that's not good for you.
Just quick one on that. I think it's not just positioning, but product strategy. And I'll riff on that, but I'll let Brian go.
Oh, I think it's not just product strategy. I think it's expectation management. Look, if they would have set the expectation that this was an MVP and all that kind of stuff, I actually think the reaction would have been like, whoa, this is a fucking amazing MVP. But they did it, right? A lot of the backlash is that they raised a couple $100 million. They actually didn't try to launch an MVP. They came out with this grand announcement that didn't really set the expectation that it was an MVP. And then even the tone of the launch and the presentation, which we talked about on a previous podcast, was just like, so Apple. And then the positioning also plays into this, which was to not have the humility that this was an MVP and that it wasn't ready to be positioned against like personal computing and stuff. But I just think this was incredibly poor positioning from an expectation management perspective, as well as
product marketing.
As part of it. And that's part of the backlash.
So there's a product marketing piece. And I think a piece of it is, this is a thing I see all the time with product strategy, which is you start at the end. What is the vision of what we want to bring to the world? And the way you do it is you say, that's these 12 things. So let's work on all 12 of them, because it doesn't work if we don't have all of them. And then you end up with 12 okay things, none of which really work that well, that if they all worked at 100%, it would be a great product. Now, I think of this as a simple math problem. The likelihood that I nail something is 90%. If I have 10 of those things, my likelihood of success is now down at like 30% or something. Mm. I don't know. 0.9 to the 10th. And so now you have multiplied your error because you are depending on all of the pieces fitting together. In my personal view, a better way to think about this is to think about that end stage as a series of sequences. And I think this is something people miss about Apple, is that Apple is actually awesome at this. They do not ship a device that does 12 things okay. They have never done that. The first iPhone had no app store, had just a browser, made phone calls. It was basically a phone with a couple of apps and a browser. And what they said was, we are going to nail Safari on the phone, and we're going to nail Touch. And then they sequence to each individual piece after that.
Mm.
Best example I always use is like, Touch ID didn't seem to make much sense. It doesn't make that much sense as an easier way to unlock my phone on its own, but it worked really well. And then Touch ID turns into Apple Pay as a next step. But these pieces of the puzzle that like layer on top of each other to help you, then to Face ID makes it even better, right? These kinds of things. And I think it's not just that they positioned it wrong. I think the foundational product strategy, which is, by doing these 12 things, we've built a revolutionary device, is there is a way to get to those 12 things over 3 years, one at a time.
Right.
And I think they just didn't think about it that way. And honestly, the same is true of Tesla, which is also like a pretty big deal. First, it's just an electric car. It's like each of these pieces like layer. And so for me as a product person, that's the piece that makes me sad, is I actually do think this could be really cool. I think you just went about it in the wrong order. It's not just that you positioned it.
Yeah, just to be clear, I'm like in like the middle of this whole debate. Like as a maker, I'm like, wow, this is like, I thought it was like a really cool first shot. So it wasn't like bad making. It was, as Kieran said, it was just bad marketing. And I think, unfortunately, it's going to kill any chance that they have at, you know, some kind of second shot here.
I'm curious to get your take then on the MVP part, because what you're basically saying, Brian, is you don't get a second chance. So how do you think about that as a product person wanting to put this out in the world to get customers feedback?
No, I think if they would have marketed better and set expectations better, that they would have had a second chance. They would have been able to launch this thing, still target the early adopters, figuring out like what was resonating, what was not resonating without the huge backlash, right? A lot of the backlash from some of the things that I have read is, you told me it would do X and it doesn't even come close to that. And once again, it's just like bad expectation management. So I have no idea what the capital situation is and all that kind of stuff, but it feels like it's going to trigger like a negative flywheel for the whole thing. Okay. But Limitless, I actually missed Limitless, and now I'm more looking at the website and I've pre-ordered so many of these damn things. I'm like looking at this, I'm like, have I pre-ordered this or not? So
no, you have not, pre-ordered this.
So I have to go pre-order this other one too. Yeah.
This one sits a lot closer to where Rabbit is at, although I think it's even more narrow. And it's a very simple pin. The core use case is record meetings. Now, I think it's a little bit weird because like most people's meetings are on Zoom these days or online. I don't know where it fits in there, but I think it's a very narrow set of use case that it nails, that hopefully will nail really well because it's a singular thing. And I think the price point is just, it's great for early adopters. Like you said, Brian, I will buy anything under $200 that's like cool and neat and fun to play with. And so that's a cap for me. Like anything past that, I'm like, whoa, now I have to like believe. And so I think it nails that. And it shows, apparently they've had a ton of pre-orders on this.
But isn't this an example? That company, so if they rebranded, like that company were an existing company. They already had a pretty great brand. So I do wonder, how much of the good feeling is the fact that it was launched by a company who already has an existing brand that tech love? What was the name of the company? I've gone blank. Rewind. Yeah. So,
oh wait, this is Rewind.
So it does.
I totally missed this announcement. Okay. Okay. Yeah, right. All right. Okay. Got it. Yeah.
So it connects to their app, right? Like it, I think it connects.
So.
Yeah. And so I do think that they benefit from the fact they have an existing brand that people love. You have more goodwill in your favor, whereas Humane do not have that in their favor. Now they went awry for all the reasons we talked about, but there is something to be said by the fact that the Rewind crew have a really great reputation and brand in the space.
Rewind launched pretty early. I think immediately positioned it as like an alpha beta. It was like a very horizontal thing. And you have seen them try to find like the more specific use case, like, because they started as just like record everything and you can play back anything. And they've continued to narrow in. And now they're like very much narrowing in on meetings. And by the way, I have pre-ordered this because they had like a pendant. Rewind had a pendant thing that I did pre-order. But now I'm looking through my emails and they're asking me to pre-order this one too. So who the hell knows? But
Brian's going to turn up one day with just like this.
Yeah, they're going to be dangling from me like ornaments on a Christmas tree.
My favorite thing is when, I mean, in the Kickstarter era, there were at Indiegogo, there were a lot of these things, and a box would just show up at the house, and I'd be like, "What the hell is this? Like, where? What?" And then I'd open it and be like, oh, "I totally forgot about this. It's been 19 months since I ordered it." And I think we're back there with some of these AI things for sure.
Yeah. I bought an incredible travel bag on Kickstarter, and it arrived 3 years later. No, it was a good bag, but I don't know if it was 3 years wait. Good bag.
The camera I use for this podcast, which by the way I love, it's the Lumina AI camera thing. I absolutely love it. It does just a few things very well. I bought, totally forgot about, completely forgot about. Then people started posting about getting it. And I was like, wait, where's my Lumina? I was like super early on this thing. And I go into my email and there was like a, your shipping address hasn't been updated, so we can't send it to you. Yeah. So I even got it like 4 months later. That I was supposed to get it because of that. And I finally got it. I'm super, super happy with it.
Should have an AI agent
free ad.
Scrape your inbox for orders and be able to log into your apps and see if they've been delivered or not. Actually, I would benefit from that as well. I'm buying so much stuff for my new daughter that I don't know what I bought, what's been delivered, and what else has to be delivered.
Oh, we're on a great, this is a great riff because the Shopify shop app does a pretty decent job of scraping your inbox for all shipping notifications companies. If they're Shopify stores, it definitely knows them, but you can give it access to your email so it will look at the other ones. Amazon is sneaky with their emails. They do some stuff to make it hard for scrapers. They don't put the items in it, although they've started to put items back in their emails, I've noticed recently. So it doesn't work perfectly with Amazon, but it works well with a lot of other things, and I've been really happy with it.
That's
tracking
cool.
information in the app and that kind of thing. So you should check that out. Man, tons of free ads today.
Very, very cool.
How should a creator think about, I mean, I struggle with this podcast. We're literally called Unsolicited Feedback. And sometimes I want to be careful about negative feedback with products. Mm-hmm. Kieran, as someone who, like, you, given the creator network and those kinds of things, how do you guys think about this? And do you think it was wrong of him to post this review?
So I think they're somewhat different. So the creator side of things, we would rather speak positively about other brands and versus negatively. So we are very like specific that if you have something negative to say, it's just not part of what the HubSpot creator network is about. But this person, I know they've done some incredible reviews on cars. That's their profession. So I think it comes back to what Brian said, which is if you go, like I'm on the website now, their website makes it look like this is an Apple-esque product, right? So that's on them, not the creator. I think if they had managed the expectations of everyone, maybe the review would have been very different. But when you actually dig into the review, it's a pretty honest review, right? He says the product experience is bad. It was slow to answer, often wrong. We know that about AI. Like it's inconsistent and confidently wrong, which is a feature, not a bug. It doesn't connect to your phone, right? This is the other thing is with all of these kind of AI pendants and things like that, we have a device that we carry around with us. And I wonder, really, is anything going to displace that? Or we're just going to integrate all of this stuff into one device? And he does say in it, maybe this is just too early to be released. And the other thing he said, people really got the head in wrong. He said like the worst product review for now. What he meant by for now wasn't that he was going to review another product that would be worse. He meant that this product would be better at some point in time. So again, I don't think there was anything wrong with the review. It's on the company to manage the expectations of the people. And if you set the expectation that you're an Apple-esque product, then you're going to be reviewed in that way.
People feel lied to when you way overset expectations and miss the mark. They don't, and especially consumers, right? Like, they're not like, oh, like this is an MVP. They're just like, you fucking lied to me. And that's the reaction. Yeah.
I think the other piece of the puzzle is I've watched a ton of car review YouTube videos recently. Cars are a super mature market. And every car review basically boils down to, here are the things it does exceptionally well. Here are the things that could be better. You have to have something in the, here are the things it does exceptionally well, so that it feels like a balanced review. Hyper-positive reviews, I skip through on YouTube. I'm like, this was obviously paid for. You're a shill. This is a total waste of time. The people who have built great reputations are the ones who you trust, and they give honest feedback. But if you have nothing in the here's what's exceptionally good, you're basically like setting yourself up for an awful review of here are all the ways in which it failed me. And again, even if you build all 12 things that add up to replacing your phone, one of them better absolutely crush it.
Exactly.
Like, it better be so good. You're like, screw Siri for this one thing.
But I don't think they give the one thing. Here's the one thing that you should really use it for. Here's the one thing that we excel at. That comes back to my product positioning, which is they didn't really say what the thing was. And I don't know what the thing is. Are they better? I think the reviewer found out that I think his summary was, it's not better for anything.
Hmm. Yeah.
And so that's a pretty bad place to be. Yeah. And so if you were that company and you had the product and you were like, wow, there's a pretty big mismatch between what it does and what we've got on the website, wouldn't you start to try to figure out how to tell the story that, it actually does this one thing incredibly well. You should try to use it for that one thing. And I just don't think they did that.
Let me just pivot to what I think we try to do here. We give feedback and we talk about products we like and don't like and things like this. But the goal is, what are the lessons that you as a builder can take away from this?
One thing I do love is this kind of hardware innovation. It seems like we haven't really had innovation for a long time. I don't know about you all, but I don't really even update my iPhone anymore. It does what I need it to do. I'm not going to get the next version. I don't care about getting the next version, but we've seen this kind of...
I have a 12 that's cracked.
I think I have an 11 that's cracked. And so I bought a new one for my partner, Marie, because we needed the camera because we have a baby now. And I don't take photos. I'm terrible, but she takes all the photos. So she should have the better phone. You see this avalanche of AI hardware. And so it's really, I think it's an exciting time if you're like a tech geek. I love playing around with new things. And I was looking at them recently and speaking to them actually about Kip. Like, he got the Rabbit R1. I'm going to get the Limitless because I love that company. They're pendant. I was going to get the Rabbit R1.
I'm waiting on mine. It's not here yet.
I should have probably pulled the trigger. I don't know if you read the interview from Johnny Ives where there's always been the rumored connection with OpenAI to build the phone. And one of the things Johnny Ives says was the thing he regrets most. And again, I could be butchering this or it could be not completely accurate because who knows in the internet. But the one thing he regrets about the iPhone was he's created this device that people are just like addicted to and have in their face all the time, right? So the new slew of AI hardware is very like audio first, right? Like it's pretty much the things that we have today are very visual and these are all like very audio, right? And the phone could be very different because the iPhone kind of is the way it is in some ways because of the app clicking. But you don't need to click on any apps with AI, right? It can do it all within Stream. And so I'm wondering now, the reason everything is visual is because the devices we use are like desktop, laptop, and iPhone, right? They're the devices, so they're a visual experience. I'm wondering, is visual UX still the predominant way that we interact with the digital world? Or are we going to start to see a much more audio-first experience?
Well, that's an actually interesting thing. I was interested to get your thoughts on AirChat. The audio first Twitter, however you want to frame it. Have you played with it, Kieran?
I have not played with it. I still get an over Clubhouse.
I will say, I think there's an Apple conference coming up soon, right? WWDC.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah,
and it sounds like it's going to be an AI focused thing. I think there's an opportunity between the AirPod and the phone to like really change the way we interact with software. Yeah. I worry a little that Apple has a similar problem as Google with incentives, which is their whole economy is app-based and their relationship with developers is app-based. And I would love to see a world where the dominant interaction form is audio to start, visual to finish, if that makes sense, which is, hey, what flights are there to Los Angeles this weekend? There are four. Okay, show them to me on my screen in a custom designed, LLM created, personalized UX that I then click and finish the transaction. Things like that. That's just one example. Siri does some of this pretty well for very specific things. What's the weather today? Boom, here's a custom box that shows you what it is. I hope that they get better at this and we are way more audio interactive, but I don't think the pane of glass goes away.
I agree.
I just hope that the pane of glass is not interact with this app as much as you can versus here's a specific UI that is multimodal generated based on the set of things that you're trying to do and you interact with. I hope that we see that. I'm still skeptical that Apple knows what to do.
Do you think the younger generations would rather sit and scroll through TikTok videos or sit and listen to some audio?
This generation would like that generation to get the fuck off of TikTok and Instagram. I'll tell you that as a parent of teens. Although, but I don't know what they want. I mean, I think, look, we liked watching TV. They like watching reels. Yeah.
I think audio will be much more intertwined within how we use devices, but for me, I can never see, humans are just a very visual being. Yeah. And it's very hard for me to think about not having some sort of visual experience. One of the things that Humane, I thought the most interesting part of that technology, which you could extrapolate how this could work on a new phone, was actually the projector, right? Because you could have a tiny phone that is audio driven, but for anything visual could project it on any kind of surface. And so there are ways that the visual experience could exist, but just in a very different form.
Yeah. I will say the other thing, Brian, I love this because you're like, do teenagers want to do this through audio? We all look as old, hardworking tech type people at productivity oriented use cases for things. We're like, oh, I'll be able to ask my AirPods to do anything or my record all these meetings, et cetera. But like, the 99% of the use on the phone is entertainment-based use cases. Now, there might be AI on the back end, but the most entertaining mediums are video. Yeah. This is why YouTube is still the dominant channel in the world, why TikTok, Instagram, et cetera, are so like addictive is because the same reason we sat around and watched Saturday morning cartoons all morning when we were kids.
Inspector Gadget.
That just came up in conversation the other day. For some reason. I don't remember why. But yeah, so I think that's the other thing is that on our end of the podcast talking headspace, we're like, look at all these productivity ways. Audio will take over. But and this is, I will say, Brian, my experience so far with AirChat is I'm reading faster than I'm listening, and even at the 2x speed. So I'm cranking through them, and I can't figure out how it's different than Twitter for me yet. I'm impatient.
That's why I'm not bullish about AirChat, because the challenge to any network is the friction to create content, and audio is just a smaller subset of people that would ever create audio notes.
Yeah.
Right? How many people create content on Twitter? Isn't it like 15-20%? Is it just the Pareto law or the 20% create all content?
Something like that.
This is why I always ask about the younger generations, because one of the patterns that I've like at least seen or observed, but not deeply of the younger generations, is a lot of them don't text. A lot of them will just leave voice notes, and that's how they communicate. And that was going to be my question. And actually, one of my observations about AirChat is that they've like tapped into this older techie audience because of the founders. But I think among that audience, I agree with you, Kieran, there's a much smaller subset of folks.
I'm intrigued by it, but I haven't found the right time to use it. And this has been my little bit of a struggle. I love audio. I listen to a lot of podcasts. Dozens of hours a week, tech, golf, all kinds of stuff. But I listen to it in the car. Yeah. I listen to it when I'm doing dishes.
Exactly.
I listen to it when I'm walking the dog. And it's all of those three things have one thing in common, which is I cannot have my pane of magic glass glued to my face like I can all the other times.
Exactly.
And so audio is perfect. My concern with my tricky thing with AirChat right now is that I have to touch it still for it to work and for me to interact, but it's audio. And so it's in this uncanny valley, and I'm trying to figure out when to use it. And also, let's be honest, No one wants to record a voice note while they're in the bathroom. But I might be scrolling Twitter or tweeting there. And so that's the other piece of the
puzzle. Doesn't it just turn into a micro podcasting platform? And that is just not a big business.
I don't know. We'll see. Brian Norgaard on AirChat did use the analogy of there was blogging and then there was Twitter and there's podcasting and maybe now there's AirChat. I think it's interesting perspective, but you never know with these. Make it smaller. Does it get bigger or not? I don't know.
I think there's a reason Elon wants to bring Vine back into Twitter and not create audio, because as you said, what's the percentage of people who are scrolling Twitter for entertainment versus trying to create valuable educational content? And then take the people who are trying to create educational content or valuable content and then split that into people who will actually create voice notes, mm-hmm. right? Like I get the voice note for young people who create it to share with their friends. That is a text, that is a WhatsApp use case, I think, more than a social network use case. Mm. I think, but I could be wrong.
Yeah. I am curious. I'm trying to play around. I will say, if you're listening to this, I need more than just the founders of AirChat to be what's in my feed right now. So I need somebody else to be creating
They're
stuff.
Doing an Elon. Are they doing an Elon where they've created the algorithm to just put next to your feed?
I follow them. I know one of them, this kind of thing. It's early social networks have this nature of like 80% of the conversations are about the thing itself.
Right.
The early days of Clubhouse, half the conversations right. were about how Clubhouse is interesting. And I'm waiting for the next thing to break through there. But right now, my feed is literally just the hyper creators and the founders and stuff. So yeah. I need new voices in there. I haven't found the pockets.
Hey, this was the funnest podcast I've ever been on. I don't know if that's a metric you care about, but this is actually talking to people who have real conversations about things. It's awesome.
So I love it.
I appreciate you asking.
Hey, Brian.
I really enjoy this.
And that's a wrap on part two with Karen Flanagan, CMO of Zapier and HubSpot. I hope that you enjoyed this episode. I certainly learned a ton along the way. If you have any feedback for us, please let us know. Go to unsolicitedfeedback.co and sign up for our newsletter, or feel free to drop me a line on LinkedIn, Twitter, or your favorite social network. Thanks so much. See you next week.